Now please join me in prayer. Amen. You know, some bad things are worse than others. I don't know if you've ever had a bad back, but when you have a bad back, you can't do anything. It's absolutely debilitating. And there's a few things like that, I think, that when something's wrong with this part of your life, your whole life goes cattywampus. And one of those things is sleep. Is insomnia. I don't know if you've ever suffered from insomnia. My mother is a lifelong insomniac, and I've seen the way, it's just the brutality of it in your life, the way it messes up everything. I have personally been mostly free of the problem, although there have been times in my life when I couldn't sleep, and you all know those times, times of crisis, times of stress, times of an impending change, of great uncertainty, professional transitions, times of relationships shifting, losing, times of grief or loss or illness, those times when you lie in bed and you just can't fall asleep. And it is such an impact on your life, such a impact on your day that you can't concentrate. At least I can't. I can't focus. I can't see anything straight. I get fuzzy in my thinking. And I dread going to bed. The one thing that might be able to heal me becomes a cause of fear. Will tonight be like last night, where I'll get into bed and I'll just lie there all night long watching the numbers change on the digital clock, sleeping in fits and starts? Is it only 3 o'clock? Is it already 4 o'clock? Oh my Lord, 5:15, I just have to get up in just a minute. Will I get any sleep at all? There is something beautiful about the night, to be sure. It's silence, especially in winter, the way the cold and the snow deadens the noise. There's something beautiful about the night, that blanket of isolation that can be so lonely but also sheltering. There's something beautiful about the night, but it can be such a time of dread too. And I think about times when I've just sat on my bed by my window, not able to sleep, and looked out and seeing the window and the high rise across the way, couple lights on, wondering if those people too are suffering like me. Wondering if maybe those people too, in the few lights that still are lit at 2 a.m., if those are people who are my friends, my allies on this cold, dark night. And then the cycle of anxiety restarts. What time is it? What is the clock telling me next? I bring this up because I think in Advent, at least according to the way the lectionary sets it out for us, we are invited to have a kind of an insomniac spirituality about Advent. We're invited to focus on these texts of the dread of the nighttime and the promise of the light seen from afar. The incarnation of Jesus comes not just as a personal event, but as a public, transformative, cosmic revelation. And so theologians have thought about it as something that changes time, it changes space, it brings about a new way of living. And in the dark of the night, sometimes we can get closest to thinking about what that new life, what that new way of living might be. In those long, dark, midnight hours, we can wonder. We have a little space and a little time to wonder what might be possible. So an insomniac spirituality, the spirituality that mixes hope and dread, that mixes light and dark, that mixes uncertainty with what feels so predetermined. In the text we just heard this morning, Matthew is is teaching us about insomniac spirituality. Matthew writes, imagining the end time, imagining when Jesus will come again like he came the first time, which we're supposed to remember as we prepare for him, celebrating him coming the first time, Matthew teaches us about that day and about that hour. No one knows, neither the angels of heaven nor the Son, but only the Father. And he talks about Noah, how Noah had to be ready, even though he didn't know what was going to happen, but he had to be prepared. He talks about people working side by side in the field. On that day, some will go and some will stay. You don't know what's going to happen, and you don't know when it's going to happen. So keep awake. Don't sleep, or you might miss it. For you do not know the time of the coming. Understand this, Matthew says, to make it more vivid. If the owner of the house had known what time in the night that thief was coming, he would have stayed awake and he would have been ready. Therefore, you must also be ready, for the Son of Humanity is coming at an unexpected hour. And when I read that, when I hear that, I always wonder, is that a promise or is that a threat? It's a little bit of both. That the transformation of the world is coming like a thief in the night. That this Advent, this time of preparation, we're called to celebrate, we're called to observe, is in its way a call to insomnia, to the cycle of anxiety. Is it here yet? They say that Advent is supposed to be like a little Lent, but it always has more of a flavor of preparation than a flavor of penance. Preparation for Christmas, preparation for the birth, the spirituality of the birth. But too often, I think we keep mistaking the advent of the coming of God made flesh, of Emmanuel, God with us. We mistake that with the 25th of December, a fixed date on a calendar. We all know when it is. Put our finger on it. We know how to plan for it. We know how to get ready for it. We know right when that's going to happen. But we miss something if we approach Advent as though Christmas were something certain. Maybe that's not it at all. Maybe Advent is this invitation to a kind of midwinter insomnia when we're obsessing on the calendar, but not quite sure what's going to happen when, and not quite sure when the time will be right. Maybe Jesus comes not like dawn on the 25th of December, but rather like a thief in the night, in our hearts, in our lives. And maybe we need to spend a little time lying awake and thinking about what that will bring, and appreciating the silence, appreciating the isolation, appreciating the waiting, feeling their pressure, feeling their burden, but also in expectation that there's something out there, that in those windows that I can see across the park from where I live, someone is there for me. And I am here in my lonely room for them. It is the darkest time of the year. It is the nighttime time of the year. And how many people are feeling the weight of that this year? A couple of weeks ago, I wondered whether we were as a nation moving into a time of darkness, and we're still having those fears and wonderings. Nothing has happened in the last 2 weeks to make us more certain that things will be more predictable. But there are other darknesses too. It's not just about public matters that I want to invite us to think and meditate. There are insomniac seasons in all of our lives, seasons of divorce, of illness, of mistakes and misunderstandings when we cause ourselves problems, when we experience the shortcomings of others in ways that impact our own lives, dark corners and dead ends. And then there's the basic uncertainty of life. The basic function of religion is to tell us we're going to be okay at some fundamental level. that regardless of what happens, regardless of how things work out, that we are held and owned and treasured by an unassailable and permanent reality. Well, in the middle of the night, in the hours that are darkest before the dawn, you have a time to sit in that and ponder what it really means. Advent spirituality is a spirituality for this time of darkness, a spirituality to spend exploring that tension. We move so fast to the happy ending, often we forget to experience what made things unhappy to begin with. But if you can't explore something, then you can't heal it. If we don't pause to explore the darkness in our lives, we can never figure out how to light them up, how to heal them, how to bring them into the day. So keep awake. That's what Matthew says to us at the beginning of Advent. The nights are the longest. Nevertheless, keep awake. We know when December 25th is, but when will the Holy One become flesh in our lives? Keep awake. Because like a twinkling light that shows up in that distant window, that's how it will come. Like a candle uncovered, seen in a distance, in the dark. In my other life, I am a student of something called religion and literature. What that means is I spend a lot of time studying and thinking about and writing about poems and plays and movies and songs and how things that human beings have created testify to the truth and the beauty and the reality of God in our lives. And so sometimes I like to bring in, even in my sermons, things that are not strictly speaking scriptural, but resources from the imaginations of faithful human beings trying to figure things out. So on the cover of your bulletin, you'll see the end, the last stanza of a poem by W.H. Auden. Auden lived in dangerous times. He was born in England, grew up in London, moved to New York City at the beginning of World War II because he saw what was coming. He saw the gathering darkness. And this poem, called September 1st, 1939, and published in October of 1939, he'd already foreseen so much. The poem talks about, seems to foreshadow the London Blitzkrieg, when everything had to be dark all the time, or else the German bombers would know where to bomb. And so he talks about the secret little lights that shine out in the gathering places, places where people came together in the loneliest and most terrifying times, and a little bit of light escaped through the cracks in the door. And you should also know that Auden was a gay man and wasn't able, therefore, to find safe spaces. And so, again, there's an overtone here of places where people could go, secret places, quiet, discreet places, where a little light shone out through a closed door or a darkened window, letting you know that you could come there and find some safety and some companionship. So he writes this poem about the gathering darkness he sees in Europe, and trying heroically to capture both the full horror of what was going to come, but also the full possibility of a noble human response. And to me, he sums it up so beautifully in this last stanza at the end of this long poem. He writes, "Defenseless under the night, our world in stupor lies. Yet, dotted everywhere, ironic points of light flash out wherever the just exchange their messages. May I, composed like them of eros and of dust, beleaguered by the same negation and despair, show an affirming flame." I think that's what Matthew has in mind. We don't know the hour of its coming, and we don't know what's going to happen, but we do know that God will hold it. We know in profound ways that we too are composed of eros and of dust, our limitations, our misdirections, our inabilities to get everything right. And we know that we can look out and see a world that is too often stupefied by our mistakes, our collective mistakes as a people, as a culture. We see the darkness lying defenseless under the night. But if we keep staring into that darkness, as our eyes get accustomed to it, we can begin to see the twinkling of the signals of other people like us. Those ironic points of light, he calls them, flashing out wherever the just exchange their messages. So if today is the Candle of Hope Day, let that be our prayer. Not the prayer of optimism, optimism that is so often invested in the pretense of certainty that we can never have, but the prayer of true hope, of spiritual hope, that is earned by acknowledging the uncertainty, by staring into the darkness, by leaning into it, by looking for the dim lights of the allies that are out there waiting for us to join forces with them. Not 29 days until Christmas. That's not the prayer. The prayer is, may we, composed like them of eros and of dust, beleaguered, yes, by negation and despair, may we show an affirming flame. May we keep awake. Amen.